Thanks. So, welcome to the Sunday Nighters, a solution newcomer returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you will find this recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Bridget C. from Ohio. Yeah, compulsive overeater from Ohio. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. I'm Bridget, compulsive overeater. Very glad to be here. I was going to start by sharing some photos because I'm a 100 pounder, meaning I've been 100 pounds overweight and I'm not anymore. And it always helped me when people shared pictures because the physical recovery is what brought me in the door. I do realize that weight loss in and of itself is not recovery. That's a picture of me. I don't think I'm even at my heaviest in that picture. I got to the point where I just wouldn't let myself be photographed, but that was like the heaviest looking one I could find. I was very uncomfortable and unhappy. And then I'm going to show just a recent picture. I think this one was taken on New Year's Eve this year. So yeah, that's now healthy body weight. Been maintaining a healthy body weight for over 2 years now, for the first time in my entire life. But more importantly than that, I'm abstinent, abstinent today. My abstinence date is September 27th, 2020. That was the date of my first OA meeting, and I have been continuously abstinent during that time. There have been times I almost felt like I had to apologize for my abstinence. I got asked to speak at a meeting one time and they said, "Oh, wait, you can't speak because you've never relapsed." I had an old timer tell me that your relapse was not a requirement of this program. And my sponsor pointed out to me that the Big Book is full of examples of people who stopped drinking, and never took a drink again. So I'm going to tell you a little bit what it was like first, before I get into, what happened and how I worked the steps today. So I was always a compulsive overeater. That's always been my experience since my earliest memory. I don't know why exactly. We say the reasons for the illness are unimportant. I had a wonderful childhood. I had kind, loving, successful, parents. I knew I was loved. They did show love a lot through food. My mother was an attorney. My father was a college English professor. I had two younger brothers. But I have early memories of like stealing food. I have a real vivid memory of taking a can from the refrigerator of something that's supposed to be a topping or a condiment. But I just snuck the can up into my room when I was about 5 or 6 years old, ate the whole can, got in trouble. I also have a real strong food memory around a packaged food, a side dish that we used to have that said that it served four and that a serving was half of a cup. And I had a resentment at age five that, why do we only have, one box of this stuff with four servings when there are five of us. And by the way, I don't think a half cup is a serving because I would like to eat the whole box myself. And I did go on to eat whole boxes of that food. As a child, I would volunteer to wash the dishes so I could earn points with my parents. I'd be the good daughter. But I could also eat what my normal eater brothers left on the plate. It was just an opportunity for me to eat more food or go into the cupboard and sneak food to take upstairs. So that's my earliest memories is of overeating every day. So consequently, I became a chubby kid. I was teased and bullied I was always the shortest and fattest in my class. I remember they used to like they would like weigh us in class in front of everybody. That sounds kind of barbaric. I don't think they do that in schools anymore now. And when I lamented to my mother that I was being teased about my weight, she was pretty nonchalant about it. She said that I shouldn't worry about it, that that's just the way the women in our family were. And it was kind of like it was my destiny that I was going to be fat. It didn't matter as long as I got good grades and I was successful and accomplished. So that set out this cycle that I felt like I had to just be perfect at everything to compensate for being overweight. And she certainly was very successful, and I adored her and looked up to her. And she was overweight. She was overweight and overeating up to the day she died. She passed away in 2016. So in high school, I was, I was chubby, not as big as I would become, but we're like a woman's size 16 or 18 in high school. So I was still kind of, and I'm only 5 feet tall. And the way I kept my, managed my weight and my food during that time in my life was I drank a lot of diet soda and diet bars, during the week, like super restricted Monday through Friday. And then on the weekends, I would just totally binge and overeat. And I managed to, stay at a level of acceptable overweight to me. My main concern was that I wanted to be able to, get asked to the prom and have a boyfriend. And then when I went away to college, I stayed in a dorm, and they had a, a dining hall where you would go to eat, and it was like a buffet. That was disastrous for me. I was away from home and homesick, and there was all this food, and I could have as much as I wanted. And I know a lot of my friends experimented with drugs and alcohol in college. I did a little of that, but I just found that the drugs and the alcohol did not do for me what food did. It didn't comfort me in the same way. 1987, I graduated from college. I got pregnant, had my daughter. I was not married at the time. And I gained a lot of weight with the pregnancy, never lost it. And I really felt that I had, failed in my life, because the plan was, not get a degree and then, have a pregnancy out of wedlock. I was still living with my parents, and I just felt like I had really, as much as I loved my daughter, I was going to try to do my best to raise her. This wasn't how it was supposed to work. So I married the first man who showed any interest in me. And I don't know where my daughter's biological father is right now. I don't know where he was at the time. He kind of disappeared. So the man I married, it was a very abusive marriage, physically and verbally. And my overeating really took off during that time. He was obsessed with my weight. My son was born 2 years later, so that was a bright spot in that marriage. And he ended up adopting my daughter. So my husband at the time sent me to a lot of commercial weight loss programs, and I was always cheating on them. And like I'd go pick up the diet food, and then I'd hit a fast food place on the way home, and I would sneak around and eat, like when I went out to go to the grocery store. And then of course I wasn't, we're spending all this money on these commercial weight loss programs, and I wasn't losing weight. And he would ask me why, and I would say, I don't know, I can't figure it out. It's just, this is just how the women in my family are, but of course it was because I was sneaking around. I wasn't following the program. In 1991, I became a nurse, and I am still a registered nurse to this day. And I work full time, and I love it, and it's very fulfilling. And like I'm one of those people that are like, how can I be, successful in life and get good grades, and I can't figure this. I can't figure this food problem out. It just baffles me. And I used my nursing job as an opportunity to eat. Without my husband, monitoring it and giving me flack about what I was eating. It was a time where I could eat in the car on the way to work and eat at work. So by 1994, I was 29 years old at the time. I had my first bariatric surgery. It's called a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. It's a major surgery. You have an incision from like right here, all the way down. And it was secured with staples. I was in the hospital for 3 days. Fortunately, insurance paid for it. I do want to give a disclaimer that I'm not anti-bariatric surgery. It may be the solution for some people. For me, it did nothing to arrest my compulsive overeating. I did lose about 100 pounds
20
very
pounds.
quickly. Is that 10 minutes? Or I have
Yeah,
20
that's
left? Okay,
20
thank you so
left.
much. Appreciate it. But I gained it back quickly because I didn't follow the instructions. In 1995 or 90, it was probably like early 96 or so, I had gained back most of, gained and lost 100 pounds in that time frame. And my ex-husband was so disgusted with me. And he said, God, you should go to Overeaters Anonymous. And I thought he was, being a smart aleck, and he said, no, that's really a thing. You can go to it. It's like AA, but for food. And, my friend at work went and, she looks great. So I wanted to look great. I wanted him to stop, being so mean to me. So I went to the meeting, but I quickly disqualified myself. And I think I went with a chip on my shoulder, and it was because he had suggested it. And so I didn't even think about OA again for a long time after that. I did divorce him in 1999. And I thought, oh, without him, just treating me so terribly all the time, I'll lose weight. He's the problem. You know what? I was the problem. I had the problem with food long before I met him. It was just that was how I managed whatever the problem was in life was food. So I didn't, lose any weight, even after he was out of my life. By 2008, I started having problems with my left knee, and I was referred to an orthopedic surgeon, and he told me, you need to lose about 100 pounds, or you're going to have a total knee replacement by the time you're 50. And I explained to him, well, I have lost 100 pounds and I gained it back. And he said, well, have you thought about bariatric surgery? I said, well, yes, I have. He said, well, you need to try this new bariatric surgery. This is going to be the magic bullet. This is going to fix it. So I had a laparoscopic band placed around my stomach. It cost me $16,000 out of pocket. They did do some testing beforehand, and I had stretched my stomach out somehow. Somehow it was from overeating every day and not following the instructions of the bariatric surgeon. So I had that surgery in 2008. I lost some weight, but I gained it back. I ended up going to that same bariatric surgeon and paying for diet pills, which also didn't work. Tried a bunch of other commercial diet programs and methods to lose weight, and nothing relieved the obsession for me. In 2019, I ended up having to have a total knee replacement anyway. I did make it to age 54, not by age 50 as the surgeon had predicted. And then 2020 hit, and as I said, I work in healthcare, so that was really rough for everybody. It was particularly rough for people who worked in healthcare. And I started to develop complications with the band that I had placed 12 years prior in 2008. And I had to pay out of pocket to have that band surgically removed. And then I was really in a world of hurt because the band had been providing me with some restriction. And when it was gone, it was like I could eat like big quantities of food. I mean, the band, I still ate all day long, but I couldn't eat a whole lot at one sitting because it kind of was like it was like someone had cut the brake lines. So fast forward to September 2020, I went back to that orthopedic surgeon because I started having problems with my good knee. So I had the left knee, total knee replacement 2019, then 2020, the right knee. And he gave me a cortisone shot, and he said, we're going to end up having to replace this other knee if you don't lose some weight. And that was my bottom. That was what brought me to OA. I cried all the way home from that appointment. And then that was on a Friday. And then Sunday, September 27th, I was sitting here in this office, and I was just laying on the floor, face down on the floor, just sobbing and crying and praying, because I've always believed in God. I don't know what to do. I can't stop eating. I have to lose weight. I have to lose weight, or I'm gonna end up having to have this another knee replacement. And for anybody who's ever had one, it's a pretty brutal surgery. And I asked God, what should I do? I'll do anything. And I had never prayed like that before. And God spoke to me. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was this still small voice that said, you need to go to Overeaters Anonymous. So I hadn't thought about OA in, like over 20 years since I had gone to that one meeting. And so I found an online meeting because there were no in-person meetings where I lived at the time because of the pandemic. I cried all through the meeting. There was a man who said he had been abstinent for 12 continuous years. He really got my attention when he told a story about before he became abstinent, he tried to eat a frozen birthday cake with an ice pick. And I thought, okay, I'm home. These are my people. And I just listened to whatever they told me to do because I wanted what they had. I would have gone skydiving. They told me that's what I needed to do to become abstinent. I started my food plan that day. There used to be a pamphlet called The Dignity of Choice. I think it's now an OA pamphlet called A New Plan of New Way of Eating. And it has like sample suggested food plans. I just picked one. I just said, God, which one should I do? And I started it that day. Initially, I thought, oh, I'll do this by myself, because I work full time and I'm busy and I'll just get the literature and I'll just go to meetings. And people said, no, you need to get a sponsor. So I thought, okay, for once in my freaking life, I'm going to follow directions and do the program as directed. So I got a sponsor. I still have the same sponsor today. I remember the first 30 days of abstinence were very brutal. It felt like a death. Because I use food to manage all of my life's problems. I use food to respond to every emotion. I remember fearing when I started that I would have no joy in life if I couldn't just eat what I wanted when I wanted. But I started writing down what I was going to eat, use pen and paper. I still do this morning. Actually, last night, wrote down what I was going to eat, took a screenshot of it, sent it to my sponsor in the morning, this morning. If anything changed today, it didn't change. But if anything changed, then I just send her another text or call her and we talk about it. And I've been doing that for 1,239 days today. The 27th will be 3 years and 5 months of continuous abstinence. And I'm sharing just what works for me. This is how I work my program. I'm not prescribing. I did find it was much easier to stay abstinent once I began to work through the steps. Going to meetings was not enough. In the beginning, it was. I feel that I took step one, admitted that I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable. I think I took that day that I was laying here in this office crying and saying, God, I can't stop eating. What should I do? I gave up. I had overate every day. I feel that sending my food daily to my sponsor is a good reminder that I'm still powerless over food. Step two came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. As I've mentioned before, I always believed in God, but I wanted God to make me thin. I wanted him to make me thin, yet still allow me to continue to overeat and eat what I wanted. I didn't want to give up control of my food. Step three, that making a decision to, turn my will and my life over to the care of God is a decision that I made on September 27th, 2020, and I have to make that. I have to renew that decision daily. I do that in a formal way by saying the third step prayer out loud. It's on page 63 in the big book, in case you want to read it. I like to say it as it's written in the big book because I feel like a sense of solidarity with people in OA and AA and all kinds of 12-step programs. There are people all over the world that say this same prayer. And that just kind of helps me because I don't feel like I'm so alone in my addiction. I also kind of have a shortened version of that prayer is I just frequently throughout the day say, God, what do you want me to do? Which was my first prayer to him that day on the 27th of 2020. What do you want me to do? Not, God, help me to do X, Y, or Z, or God, this is how I need you to move or act or change this person. And I ask God to direct my thinking. I ask God to direct my actions. in everything, not just in food. Step four, the searching and fearless moral inventory. I was very afraid of that. But I found that I got a lot of relief when I made that inventory and when I shared out loud with my sponsor in step five, which is that, you know, we're going to admit to God, to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. I forgave my ex-husband, let go of a lot of shame. Ironically, I just finished another step four inventory in a different 12-step program. I started a 12-step program for sex and love addiction. And one thing that I've heard, I'm just going to put this out there, is the credits don't transfer. So just having recovery in one program doesn't guarantee. It's like you got to apply these steps to whatever. I believe you have to apply them to whatever the addiction is.
10 minutes.
Thank you so much. So step six and seven, being entirely ready to have God remove all the defects of character and asking God to remove the shortcomings. I just remember feeling very relieved that I didn't have to, you know, fix myself or remove these shortcomings, because I've been trying, you know, it wasn't working. An example that I found helpful was I thought about it as if, like when I go to the dentist and I have like a diseased tooth that needs to be removed, I don't try to remove the tooth myself. I have to cooperate. I have to let the dentist, I have to be willing to let go of the tooth, and I have to let the dentist just pull the tooth. And so I kind of thought about it like that. That's how I thought of my shortcomings. And I think it's interesting that the step doesn't say that God, and then God removed our shortcomings. It just says we ask God to remove the shortcomings. And I think God chooses how and when that's going to happen. So I still have shortcomings. I'm not like this miraculous, perfect person. Step eight, made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I was very fortunate that I was willing. I've heard the big book says, you know, if you're not willing, you pray for willingness. I was willing because I did not want to lose my abstinence. It was probably early 2021 when I was working on step eight, and I didn't want to lose this because for the first time in my life, I was starting to have some freedom from thinking about food all the time. So I was willing to go to any lengths. And step nine, making direct amends whenever possible. In some cases, it wasn't possible to make direct amends. For my parents, I had to go to their grave and read my amends out loud. My ex-husband, my second husband that I had after I told you about my abusive ex-husband, my second ex-husband, I had to make some amends to him, but he is remarried, and his wife, he didn't want to hear from me. You know, and so I had to just make a living amends by being, you know, kind to him when I do run into him. But I did make the amends, and I really started to get food neutrality after I made those amends. We'll talk about step 10 a little bit, which is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I practice this step daily. I do it in writing. I personally believe that an inventory, you know, by definition, should be written down. Like, I imagine a business trying to take an inventory of all their stock and what they have and trying to keep track of it in your head. I tried initially doing it in my head, like just sort of reviewing it, and I just end up falling asleep. It's much more effective when I write it down at the end of the day. And I just use the big book, the questions in the big book that were we resentful? Were we angry? Do we owe an apology? I just follow along and just answer those questions in my little journal, the same journal where I, write my food out for the next day. I write a gratitude list every day. The only exception is if I owe an apology, I don't wait. I apologize right then and there. And the big book says that step 10 is not an overnight matter, and it should continue throughout our lifetime. So I don't think it's optional. So I continue to do it. Also, because it's working, I continue to do it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. So initially I was praying every day, but I wasn't meditating because that was not like part of my religious tradition. And it was just something I had never thought of before. My sponsor pointed out that it doesn't say, the step does not say sought through prayer or meditation, or meditation. It says prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. So it's not optional. So I started a meditation practice. I think of prayer as talking to God, and I talk to God all throughout the day, but now I make some time every day to listen to God. And since I'm not experienced at meditation, I'm getting better at it. Sometimes I just set a timer and I just close my eyes and listen to God and try to block out any other thoughts. Sometimes I'll do some kind of a guided meditation. My prayer is much different than it used to be. I no longer give God directions. I no longer give God suggestions. I no longer tell God about my plan and how he's going to fit in and help execute my plan. But that is how I used to pray. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening is the result of these steps. Someone pointed that the reason I emphasize the word the when I just said that is someone pointed out to me is that the step does not read as a result, but the result. So the implication being, if I work these steps, if I work the program as written, I will have a spiritual awakening. And I have, you know, all of the promises in the big book have come true for me. You can read the promises for yourself. It's on page 83. But one of the big ones is that my whole attitude and outlook on life has changed. It said it was going to happen. I wasn't sure if it was really going to work, but it did. It says that God will do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And God continues to do every day for me what I could never do for myself. I couldn't put together a single day of abstinence. And now I have 1,239 days of abstinence. So the obsession with food is gone too. I mean, occasionally I have food thoughts because I'm still a compulsive overeater. I am experiencing recovery, but I'm not cured, and I don't have any illusions that I'll ever be cured. The second part of step 12, carrying the message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all areas of my life, mainly accomplished that through sponsorship. I've been sponsoring since I was able to sponsor. As soon as I finished step 12, I started sponsoring, and I still have some of the same sponsees. Not taking on any new sponsees right now because I'm trying, as I mentioned, I'm working through the steps in another 12-step program, and I don't feel like it's time for me to do that. And that's been my communication from my higher power. But I do continue to sponsor people. One of the main reasons I sponsor people is because the big book says that nothing will guarantee our immunity as much from drinking, from alcohol, for, you know, as work with other intensive work with other alcoholics. And I believe that the same is true, that part of the reason that I'm granted this miraculous abstinence is because I am working every day with other compulsive overeaters like myself. I also, you know, share my experience whenever I'm asked. I try to never say no if I'm asked to share. I try to make time to do that. I think of my abstinence itself as an act of service. I think of myself as not only carrying the message that I want to be the message, I want to embody the message. I want to be living evidence that this program does work if it's worked as written. I do spend a lot of time working my program. I go to one meeting or another. I mean, as I mentioned, I'm in another 12-step program. So I'm either going to a meeting in that program or an OA meeting every day. I, you know, contact with my sponsor every day. I read the big book every day. Pray, meditate every day. You know what? It's still less time than I used to spend chasing the food, thinking about what I was going to eat, thinking about what my next diet was. It's still less time. And I have a life that I couldn't have imagined. And I was thinking, you know, I used to pray that God would make me thin and let me continue to eat whatever I wanted, continue to live the way that I was living. And I realized recently that if if God were to take me up on that offer and say, okay, Bridget, you can stay, you know, you're at this healthy body weight now, and you can go back and eat all that, eat the way you used to eat. I would not want to do it. I would not want to go back to that way of life. I much prefer this 12-step way of life. And since I think I have a little bit of time, how much time do I have left? I got a minute, a
40,
couple
40
minutes.
seconds.
40 seconds. I'm gonna read real quick then. This is my favorite part of the big book. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We'll see our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And that has been my experience. Thank you all so much for listening.
Wonderful. So recording.